I was used to being. Where's Erin?
Senate side.
Oh, darn.
She hasn't been here for 3 months.
Happy to have you, Laura.
As far as I know.
I'll call the House Committee on Healthcare to order and stand at ease until we get a few more members. On HB 3, oh, are we on?
Yeah.
Open a public hearing on HB 3234. Is it okay to open a public hearing twice? I know I can't recently.
Absolutely.
I can't adjourn twice.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Thompson, you want to start us on this one?
Sure, you will.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Thompson, State Representative, House District 23. Most of you know me by now, but just in case.
Representative Thompson, I neglected to take a moment and ask our administrator to tell us what we're talking about here.
That'd be a good idea.
You'll just hold off a second?
Not a problem.
If she doesn't, you're going to have to.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HB 3234 is requiring that the clinical labs release test results of anticoagulant patients immediately upon receiving the proper authorization from the provider that ordered the test. That's it.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Please go ahead now.
No, I got ahead of myself. I'm so used to having it done ahead of time, and she was always on her toes and wasn't ready here for that. Okay, this bill came to us as a constituent bill having to do with a problem with the anticoagulant laboratory testing system, whereby with the modern techniques in anticoagulants, a person goes into the lab, has their levels checked, could be given the information, adjust their meds and whatnot proportionately, which they're trained to do, and life goes on. With the way the Oregon statutes are, the labs are prevented from giving this information directly to the patient. It has to be released back to the doctor, which requires a patient then to contact a doctor to get the information, et cetera, et cetera. It's a bit of a stumbling block because that time element is important in the treatment. It's much more efficient and efficacious if the patient knows the information right away. So the bill that we submitted is directed toward the anticoagulant situation directly, allowing for patients to have the information released to them from the lab directly if that lab has a letter of authorization to do so, which could be a collaborative agreement for more than one patient from the physician. The idea being it would streamline everything and the physician doesn't need to be a part of this unless they choose to be. Okay, unbeknownst to us, another constituent talked with Senator Bates, and that precipitated a second bill on the same subject. And that bill is broader. It allows for a collaborative agreement between a physician and a lab on any medical test, and not just anticoagulants. We reasoned that that was a better bill in terms of streamlining medical care, and substituted that in as a suggested amendment to the original bill. Now, this wouldn't mean wholesale opening up everything. That would be up to the physician. Reasonably, a physician dealing with a laboratory would issue a letter of collaborative agreement with that laboratory saying, you may release directly to patients information on lab tests I've ordered carte blanche or with the exception of these tests that I don't want you to release.
Or specifically for these tests that we do.
Yeah, right. So they leaves a great deal of into translation, but it at least allows a relationship between a physician and a laboratory so that the patient, in whatever cases are deemed sufficient, would get the information in a more timely manner. So, and frankly, I think it's up to the discussion or decision of the committee as to whether you want to go the broader or narrower route. But that's the difference. The Dash 1 amendments say that you can do this on any laboratory test with the letter and any curtailments the physician may want to issue. The original bill speaks only to the anticoagulant issue. And I understand we have someone here from Public Health, Rita Yoel, who will be giving testimony. That may, I'm not asking you to make a decision immediately, obviously.
And our options would be to adopt the Dash 1s and pass it as amended, or to adopt 3234 as it's written, send it over to the Senate, and let Dr. Bates amend it over there.
That would work.
I mean, either model.
Yeah, I just felt that the committee should see both of the directions. There was no point to have two competing bills on essentially the same subject.
Any questions?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
I may have to refer to somebody behind me, but shoot anyway. You
know? That's great. No, thanks, Representative. I have a question.
We don't have anybody that signed up to testify, so if anybody wants to, well, that's no question.
No, I have a question about a wording question about the amendment.
About the Dash 1?
Yeah. It has two options, and the first is not sooner than 7 days after receiving a request. I don't understand the not sooner. Shouldn't that be not later?
Yeah. Representative Dembrough, the way the original law is written, a laboratory may not release the results until not sooner than 7 days. So that's where that language comes from. So there is no requirement for how soon you have to release the information. It's how many days have to go before a laboratory can release the information. I think ostensibly it was probably aimed at you would transmit the information to the physician. If the physician doesn't give it to the patient in 7 days, then the laboratory could, was my reading of the original statute. But that is a requirement that there be the minimum waiting period of 7 days.
Yeah, let me follow on that. That means under current law they
under
must
law.
Do it after 7 days.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was my reading.
Okay, so if they don't, just follow up, Mr. Chair. So if they don't get it immediately, because the intent here, if they don't get it immediately, the alternative would be that, you know, due to a request by the patient, then they would have to wait 7 days to get it.
That's my understanding, yes.
Great, thank you.
My question, if you went through your story again, your story is a great example of why I'm supportive of the Dash 1. But has any conversation occurred between how the laboratories are going to implement this?
The only communications we've had in our office with laboratories has been in support of this.
Okay. But, are you saying by mail or?
Well, I mean, there are several companies. There's
email
there's InterPath and out of Pendleton, LabCorp, Quest. I mean, how are they going to implement this? I would assume they, Frank, probably don't care, but it's the actual implementation of this process, because all of a sudden they're going to these letters are going to start showing up, and I would think that maybe not a letter, but in fact on their form, when you're filling out your lab sheet, that they will have a place for a release and a doctor's signature or something to that effect.
But Demar, I think that's essentially correct. My take on this is that, and from some other situations we have with collaborative agreements, is that a physician would issue some kind of a blanket file letter that says release the information to my patients unless I instruct you to do otherwise, or some kind of agreement like that that would set up the relationship between the lab and the doctor. It still requires the doctor.
But the issue, I think, is this. I'm in my nurse practitioner's office. She draws my blood. I go home. She sends it to a lab. Now, I don't have any relationship with that lab. It's not like I went into that lab to be tested. So the question is, how does the lab know A, I want it, or B, how to release it to me. But I don't even know what lab it went to. It went somewhere in Idaho or something.
Well, if I may.
Yeah.
I think the most logical approach, and what I want to make sure is that the law doesn't prohibit it. When you fill out a lab form, you fill out the demographic
information. You being the provider?
The provider,
right.
In an independent office, not
right.
In a...
Right, no, in an independent office.
Fill out the demographic information. You check what test you want based on the sample you're providing. And there's a lot of little tiny writing that the lab people need to fill out. And that somewhere on this form, we would have to have a place to say, this information could be released immediately to the patient and, you know, provider's initial or something to that effect, and I think you're going to get to the same place.
Well, the same. My question still is there. You've done that as in the office, and you send this off to Idaho, to Acumetrics Lab. Now, how do I know where it's gone? How do I know how to ask? Do I know? Does it have an address for me on that form and they'll mail it to me? Do you give me something that says, call this 800 number and get your result?
I think that that's an issue that's going to have to be worked out. If it's drawn in a provider's office, it's going to have to be worked out between the provider's office and the patient. And the lab.
But this just authorizes the lab to do it.
To do it. But also, there are a lot of times you go to a lab draw station that is run by...
That's right.
Say Interpath, and they could have, I mean, that transaction could have been.
Chair Green, Representative Mowry, I think in all honesty, in most cases, the patient isn't even going to want this information, nor know that it could be available for routine blood tests and whatnot. But when you have these conditions where the patient may want to know immediately and may want to adjust their medication immediately, they will know that that number is important to them and know to figure out who to ask to get it.
I do a monthly nothing. Blood draw for both... for thrombin time for anticoagulation and for CBC for routine blood tests. And one comes to me by computer directly from the lab. The other one I have to go figure out how to get.
So yeah.
But the backstop on this is that the provider has to initiate that authorization.
Rita Yall? Anything you want to add to this? Do it up here.
Okay.
It'd be good to have someone who knows what they're talking about, right?
Go ahead, Madam.
Well, my name is Rita Yule, and I'm Representative Greenlake, and I manage the laboratory program that certifies all the laboratories in Oregon, and I've been an inspector for 25 years of laboratories in Oregon. So I think my only comment was, I know it doesn't clearly state it in statute that if the physician writes it on the order, give it to the patient. In practice, most of the laboratories do this because you've gotten the physician's approval to make the release. But our statute never said that clearly. So, and I guess there are some hospitals and their attorneys that have taken the position that because the statute isn't real clear on this, they're trying to correct that.
So this is making it, you believe this is making it clear?
I do. I think it's well worded, and it actually made a little clearer the part about the patient getting their results within 7 days. I think the way that's been rewritten is a little bit clearer than it was. I think it was two sessions ago where the 7 days, and the patient could go directly to the lab if they don't want to go back to the physician.
Okay, and you're saying, talking about both the dash ones and the original
yes,
bill?
Yes, the dash one opens it up on all testing.
Okay.
The department's neutral on this, but I just happen to know that the practice has been, when the doctor writes an order, the laboratory usually tries to follow and do what they say.
Okay. Thank you. You want to join us back here?
I sure do.
Hearing no other interested testimony, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3234 and open a work session on House Bill 3234. And Representative Thompson, ask you, which is your pleasure? Do you want to move the dash ones, or you want to not move the dash ones?
I think my pleasure, I wasn't prepared for that question, would be to move the dash ones because it opens the system up a little more, and it down the road allows for efficiency in healthcare management, which is one of the things this committee, I think, is about.
Could I have a motion from you to move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3234?
Mr. Chair, I move with it.
Script. Even without a script, you can.
Even without a script, I need that script. I move that we move House Bill 3234.
Oh, no, the amendments.
Oh, we move the amendments first. Okay, I move that we approve the dash one amendments to House Bill 3234 as presented.
Representative Thompson has moved that we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3234 dated 3-17-09. Any discussion? Would you any objection?
Wasn't ready for that.
We'll accept the dash ones to House Bill 3234. Representative Thompson, you want to move the bill now as amended with the dash ones?
Chair Greenlick, I move that we move House Bill 3234 with the dash one amendments to the floor.
With a due pass
recommendation.
Okay. Representative Thompson has moved HB 3234, amended with the dash one amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dembro?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Excuse.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlick?
Aye. Motion passes. Carrier?
Sure.
Thompson?
I saw that one coming, Mr. Chairman.
I close the work session on House Bill 3234, and we're marching along. We only have another 68 bills to consider as of this moment that we have in the queue open for discussion, and I do want to talk about that. Well, before I open up a work session on House Bill 2009, we have a very large number of bills. We've gotten many more. We have about 9 sessions, and when I did a rough review of the bills, and my vice chairs are now looking at that review, writing the bills as a 1, high priority, 2, open, and 3, how can I say it kindly?
No consideration.
Let's see. If something can't possibly happen, it's not likely to. They're in that category. If you have a bill and you wonder where we've given a preliminary classification, the 2 being the 1s and the 2s, we intend to hear them. And you want more information about it, please check in with me or Sandy after a day or two after Representative Maurer and Harker have had a chance to look at them. But that means we have a ton of work to do. And we have intermingled with that whole thing a little piece of complexity called HB 2009. So I would really like to schedule another evening meeting. We don't have Representative Harker here. Or Representative Kinnamer, so please make sure, Sandy, you let Representative Kinnamer this. If you would put on your calendar that we'll have a meeting from 6 to 9 on April 14th, that would be very helpful. If that turns out to be horrible, let me know, but we'll see, as long as we have a pretty good quorum. We're going to have to be rolling, so.
That's a Tuesday
night.
Will you email us that?
And I will follow up with an email. Yes.
We'll follow with an email. I just wanted to give a little advance.
I've got that for the 14th. Could you review the other 1 or 2 that are already on the schedule?
The 26th and the 25th Wednesday and the 30th Monday, I think.
And our evening meetings on the 25th and the 30th will be meeting jointly with the Senate committee. So they will be joining us for that evening session.
And where are those going to be?
Hearing room F. So on those Wednesdays and Mondays, we'll be in our normal room, and then we'll take a dinner break and then move to hearing room F on the 25th and the 30th.
And are they 6 to 8 or 6 to 9?
6 to 8 for those two meetings. And we'll be talking about mostly 2009 amendments, but we'll also, the Senate committee has a few bills to work in the middle of that session, I think probably scheduled for Monday. I just announced, Representative Harper, we're going to have a meeting on the 14th of April, 6 to 9. Tuesday night.
And you're buying dinner.
Great. I will buy dinner if that's what it takes. Absolutely. We'll have pizza.
We do because it's our job.
Okay.
I was thinking of writing my taxes that night.
Yeah. That's right. Anybody that needs to drop off their taxes, the post office here will be open until midnight. You can do it after the after the committee.
Don't say that. This is public. Somebody might take you up on this.
Maybe they're not open till midnight, huh?
No.
Are they?
It's the next day.
Not here. Where's here? In this building?
No, in Salem.
Oh.
No, yeah. I'm talking about the Salem Post Office.
Oh, okay.
You did say April 16th, right, Mr. Chair?
Pardon me?
You did say April 16th 14th. For this meeting.
14th, Tuesday?
April 14th.
I'm glad I asked.
Yes. Me too.
We could do it on the 16th, too, if we didn't finish 14th. Our business on the 14th. Okay. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 2009 and ask Mr. Burns to join us at the DS, and we want to review with you where we are planning to submit to Ledge Council Section 10, 11, 18, and 20. If you could tell us what's in each of those before you start going into an individual.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tom Burns, serving as health policy consultant to the chair. I can solve your work real quickly. Just say, four great sections. Let's go home and have a great weekend.
Let's pass. Right. Do pass.
Mr. Chair, these four sections are really the meat of House Bill 2009. And in the conversations we originally had when we went through this, it became clear from discussions with you that some things were in the wrong section, some things needed to be moved around, some things needed to be wordsmithed. And so we sat down and said, what is it that the board, which is created in Section 10, should do, and what, that is, shall they do, and what may they do? What shall the authority do, which is Section 11, and what may the authority do? What section, what the exchange ought to look like, which is Section 18, and what portions of government ought to be streamlined into the authority from various other locations throughout the state, and that's Section 20. And so when you go through that and read...
The order of these drive me a little... I mean, they...
I didn't...
They bother my high need for order, but it's the way it came out of LC, and it's too hard to change them now. So I would clearly have started with 20, then 11, then 10, then 18, but...
Mr. Chair, we can do them in any order wish, but I think the order of 10, 11, 18, and 20 might be the easiest. So I will go through these. You have all had them in front of you, and what I will do is walk you through them and raise a few policy issues that have come to my attention about these based on conversations I've heard as well as conversations you shared when we went through these initially. So Section 10 is the board. And it defines what the duties of the board are to be. And the first thing, obviously, is to be the policy and oversight body. Secondly, develop a plan to guarantee by 2015 that all Oregonians have access to affordable, quality health care and identify funding sources to pay for that cost.
This is the leftover work of the Health Fund Board.
Yes. Now, it doesn't say that what that is going to look like. It doesn't say that they can do it. They have to develop a plan. There's two policy issues here that you need to consider. Do you want to set a date for them to develop that plan? And do you want to specifically say that that plan has to come back to you for consideration? And I'm not quite sure how you want to handle these little policy things.
I don't see how they're going to develop a plan like that without bringing it to the legislature.
I don't see how they will either, Mr. Chair, but I will tell you there are certain people in the public who are very concerned about that language.
Then Anybody have a problem with putting in, develop a plan to be submitted to the legislature?
Well, I think that the pushback is when you use the word guarantee. Even though it's only developing a plan, there's just, you're going to have pushback, so.
Plan to guarantee by 2009. I take out the guarantee. I don't have any problem with that. A plan that all Oregonians will have access to health care. It's actually the plan to have all Oregonians have health care,
have
access to health care by 2015.
Right. And access is a much different conversation than coverage.
Sure, that's fine.
And submit it to the legislature. And do you want it in time for the 2011 session?
Or just
be silent on
that? It's going to take more than that. I'd be silent on
okay.
that. Okay. It isn't actually one plan. It's going to be a set of plans, obviously, okay. if they can figure out how to do it.
Okay, moving on to number C, develop a program to provide health insurance premium assistance to low and moderate income individuals who are legal residents of Oregon. And again, it's a plan for assistance. There was some concern about the word individuals and whether that ought to be families. I don't know how you want to do that, but
leave it the way it is.
And Mr. Chair, do we address what that means in this?
No.
Okay.
They'll address the plan.
What? All right. Okay.
Individuals?
That's going to be a 4-year debate. Probably better not to have it today.
Number D.
I'm sorry. The wordsmithing of legal residents in Oregon.
That's, I thought, what we came down on in here, even though.
Oh, I thought it was. Who are?
Citizens who are residents. I thought for most of the language we decided on legal residents.
Was okay.
That's language out of SB 3 from 2 years ago, which is sort of what we've been using.
There's no, I don't think there's a definition of legal residence.
Turns out there is a definition.
Is there a definition?
Okay. Basically, what we're talking about is citizens who are residents, who have established residency. I think there's a definition of it.
It's
actually not correct. I mean, it could be, you wouldn't have to be a citizen to be a
legal resident
of
right.
Oregon. So
that's right. There is a policy question. You could be a permanent resident of the United States with a residence in Oregon.
Correct.
That is correct. And that was the intent in the Healthy Kids discussion, to capture citizen children, but children who are here with documentation and legal residency as determined by the United States.
They're not eligible for Medicaid, though, are they?
They are not.
Are they?
They have to be U.S. citizens.
That is true in most cases. If they're here on refugee or immigration status, refugee status, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Let's leave this here and we'll fight about it when the plan comes. I think we're signaling what we want.
Okay. Moving on then, D is to have the board develop a health benefit plan for individuals who are covered by the PEB and OEB as a means to achieve coordination among state agencies. This is trying to make sure that the two publicly funded state agencies that are currently buying health insurance have the same benefit plan, the same structure, and the same contractors.
What's the point of having two agencies? Because we're moving them under the authority of the health authority.
There aren't two agencies.
I'm sorry, two boards. One ostensibly, they serve the same function.
Yeah, well,
they were created at different times.
We created two boards right now, but my assumption is this plan might revise that.
Well, and I would suggest that we make that statement.
I think we leave it open.
Dang it!
I don't want to get in a fight over this one. No, I don't. We're back to what I established earlier this week. What I'm trying to do is to get things in here that'll get us going without having any poison pill fights over it.
I think the key is the achieve optimal coordination part. How that actually ends up looking, I think, it depends on someone else's crystal ball. So.
And I don't think that because the two boards are mentioned in there that writes them into perpetuity.
No.
I agree. But we do. There's a lot of language in here about what we want and about what we. So if we, and I think we want that.
I think it depends on which works best. I'm a pragmatist, not an idealist.
Okay.
So I get the next best step.
I don't believe, I honestly do not believe that.
You are an
idealist.
I'm an idealistic pragmatist. I take what I can get, one step at a time. Just so it's going in the right direction.
Mr. Chair, E is to define the words quality standards for purchasers, develop a statewide quality standard for purchasers, third-party payers, health care, for quality benchmarks, performance benchmarks. This really is placeholder.
I think we decided to take it all out of that.
I'm sorry. Oh, all purchasers?
Yeah.
Okay, for purchasers. Okay.
And it's for purchasers of health care.
Okay. This is placeholder language for two bills that are out there, one in this committee, 2131, which is part of the, and both of them are health fund board bills, and the other is Senate Bill 456, which is currently being worked in the Senate, and at some point could be folded in here in this spot or left to stand alone. F is to establish clinical-based evidence-based clinical standards and practice guidelines that may be used by providers. Again, trying to get some commonality amongst how healthcare is delivered in the state.
Mr. Chair, why should that be may be used?
Well, because if I'm a provider, I can use what I want under my medical license. Yeah, I'm a physician.
So the flip side of that is we're fine with them not using evidence-based clinical practice?
I'm not sure we're fine with it, but they'll...
Just checking.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Will this leave the option of linking reimbursements to
sure.
those providers that do choose to employ evidence-based?
I would say not only reimbursement, but another issue we keep talking about, which is medical malpractice. Somewhere along the line, I think these are going to be tied into the malpractice situation. One way or the other, either positively or negatively, I think they are.
Just like before, this is a deliberate, the word is very deliberate at this point. I mean, I
May is very deliberate.
I'm okay with may subject to what we just clarified.
I mean, well, we'll change the language that lawyers will always be.
Let's not have any lawyer jokes today.
Okay, we won't have any lawyer jokes.
Well, we're lawyer jokes out of order for the day.
Hey, there's some good ones.
There are some good ones. At 5:02, you can.
All right.
Okay.
I'll begin to share them.
Do you want to add something there, though, that talks about what you just said, which is...
Not at this point, I don't want to add to it.
Well, if this is voluntary, this idea that there would be... some plan to develop to incentivize the use of this.
I would assume that's going to happen.
Well, you know, if we don't write it down. You know.
Even if we do write it down, it might not happen. But it's interesting. These are duties, which we're talking about, and not and not authorities that they may do this. They are supposed to. So let's keep it easy. Just imagine we got all these things happening. Would you be happy with that world? I think so. Thomas?
Mr. Chair, G is the community-centered health initiatives.
Incidentally, hold on a minute. Somebody asked me, does this mean the train is leaving today on these sections? And the answer is, this is the penultimate stop, but the train is not leaving. The purpose of these are they're going to LC. This is the last set of things you're going to LC with that big set of amendments, and we'll have them back before us as formal amendments where we can debate them and even change them at that time. So what we're trying to do is to get this in the best shape we can to give it to LC, which will get back a fat set of amendments. So the train is not leaving the station, but it will pretty soon. Go ahead, sir.
G is the community-centered health initiative program. Again, this is placeholder for that can stand alone. That would require the board to monitor and approve them. Or you have two bills moving that are part of the health fund board package. Senate Bill 456 is actually moving, and you have 2131 in your committee.
How is it still an 11E?
It's actually 11F.
Okay. You want to note that?
I have it in my notes. I caught that earlier. H is establish cost control mechanisms to reduce increases in health care costs.
I raise objection to the use of the word control. I would suggest containment.
That's all right with me. Anybody else? I think that says what we're trying to do.
Yeah. A concern has been raised by some insurers that to control health care costs is one thing. To control insurance costs makes them dependent on health care costs. And
sort of like this, right?
They like the health care costs exclusive of the cost of insurance. They want to make sure.
Anything about insurance in this clause.
It doesn't say anything in this. They would like those words added.
What words? That will also
establish cost containment mechanisms to reduce increases in health care costs exclusive of the cost of insurance.
No, I don't think so.
I said I would bring it to your attention.
I think
you did.
I think we're going to do both.
Suggestion was noted.
Yeah, suggestion was noted.
Mr. Chair, how do people feel about deleting increases in? What we really want to do is reduce health care costs.
I think that's
I'm not
right.
Just
no, I agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, this is one way to do it, and this is a first step. And we're never going to literally increase the actual cost year to year.
I don't know. I'm an idealist, sir.
Okay, but first step is to reduce the increases, right?
No,
but I don't have any problem with taking this out.
So I would like it to read, if possible, to reduce health care costs.
Sure.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I work with the congressional delegation as necessary.
Well, I think that's just problematic. I mean, I mean, I agree with the sentiment. I think, though, that puts a much harder line on. I mean, if we could reduce the rate of inflation, we'd be ahead of the game.
But way ahead
but
of the game.
To actually, dollar for dollar reduce costs?
It's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen without something draconian. So that's, I personally want to avoid the draconian hammer in this as much as possible.
I don't think it's going to happen with something draconian. I mean, I literally can't imagine.
Short
of a depression. I mean, in a depression, you might literally reduce health care costs because the prices drop rather than increase. So that, I mean, it is conceivable that it could happen, but I hope it doesn't. That would be draconian in its own right.
Mr. Chair?
What's the sense? Increase or not? Sense of the committee.
I initially agreed, but I think Representative Bruin makes a good point. Since this comes under the language of the duties of the board, I'm concerned this actually could be read to impose a very stringent obligation to take current costs and reduce them, and I don't know how we accomplish that. So I would maybe this language could find
go back to
better
the
expression elsewhere.
Mr. Chair,
yep.
I wish it was possible to find a middle ground between the two because I'm not satisfied that reducing increases, which might include a very slight reduction in the increase, meaning continued rapid inflation, is sufficient. So I understand and respect the concern about mandate to reduce the overall health care costs, which, as we know, is years and years away, if ever. But
do you have a suggested middle ground?
No,
how about materially reduce the increase? Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I was going to suggest just establish health care cost containment mechanisms. I mean, isn't that what we're talking about?
How does that sound? Sounds fine to me. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think this, because this is a duty and it's aspirational language, it should get at the end goal, which does have to do with healthcare costs, not the mechanisms themselves. But that may be a minor point. If we have basically consensus on establishing cost containment mechanisms, then
I can. Senator Parker?
Looking for your middle ground, what about to stabilize or health care costs, or to minimize increases in health care costs?
Sounds clunky.
Clunky?
Mr. Chair,
clunky.
If I might suggest.
No, those were two different options. I wasn't saying put all of those words. To stabilize health care costs, or put in to minimize increases.
You will face this same issue further on when you get to the authority. What this language is designed is for the board to come up with mechanisms. whatever ideas they come up with. Come up with ideas, mechanisms. That's what we're trying to do here. Establish cost containment mechanisms. Further on in Section 11, you will be asked to make a decision about whether you actually want to have the authority implement those and tie them specifically to some CPI.
Let's get the language with this first. Denver, what did you try?
Just simply establish the healthcare cost containment mechanisms. Or
I think does that feel like an okay middle ground? Okay.
Okay.
You got it?
I got it. I, Mr. Chairman, is working.
It'll end after that. It'll simply say establish cost containment mechanism.
Yeah, period. Right. Right. I, Mr. Chairman, is to work with the congressional delegation as necessary to whatever we need to do to advance federal policy. J is to establish the health benefit package for all insurance plans sold through the exchange. And on Wednesday, you discussed what the essential benefit or the health benefit package would be.
Make sense.
This has to go back to that discussion we had. Where did we end up with basic, or what was the
word? Where you ended up was this language.
No.
No.
I'm sorry. No, you didn't.
It was supposed to say either basic or essential.
Yeah. Or minimum. One of the three we ended up with.
Well, I don't
think. I just would not have that discussion again if we.
No. Oh, come on.
You ended up with the word essential. That was the word you chose, was the word essential benefit package. You chose not to put any box around those words.
Okay, then.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a central benefit package.
Let's make it now. We'll fight that out a different day.
It has to be added because this doesn't make sense.
To establish the essential benefit package. But the question is, it's not the only benefit package, and that's the...
Right, it's an.
It's an essential, not the.
Well, it's... I mean, the understanding I thought we had was... This will be the minimum benefit package, but then you can have any other. I mean, the essential benefit package will be...
You want to put the word base in there somewhere, or base minimum, or base essential?
There we go again.
There we go again.
Well, is that the same concept?
Essential benefit package. So, or I take out all for insurance offered through the health insurance exchange makes that. An essential benefit package for health insurance offered through the...
Yeah, I would eliminate all.
Let's do that.
It needs... And we'll be clear then when we get another version of the essential benefits package language that this does at least set the baseline for all insurance sold through the exchange.
That's the point. We could add the language here to say that benefit package will be a baseline. I mean, we could add a couple of words at the end of that. The essential benefit package will be a baseline for insurance offerings.
I think it's what it said.
I don't have a problem with that. Does that seem all right to folks?
I think that's fine.
Okay. Add words rather than subtract them.
Yeah.
Bad policy. Tom, what is it?
You want me to read it back?
Yeah, read back those words.
Yeah. Establish an essential health benefit package for insurance offered through the health insurance exchange as defined in Section 18. This will be the baseline package or
some
wording to that effect.
You'll have that before Monday. Talk about clunky.
If we're gonna define or make some attempt to define it, I think we don't want to miss the central part of the essential benefit package, which was how do we connect affordable cost sharing with what is ideally the most cost-effective care, i.e., you pay less for preventive, you pay more for stuff you don't need, because that's what we're trying to achieve. So can we stick that in somewhere?
Doesn't it come later?
Did we really agree to that?
Well, that's how I read that, and that's what I'd like to see.
That was the discussion you had Wednesday, and you did not come to the conclusion. You came to the conclusion that we were going to discuss the single sentence
today
before you today. And this is the sentence. We had a long laundry list of potential words around it. But the concern you expressed was that they was tied to the list of benefits, and that you had certain lines drawn and certain things and certain cost-sharing ratios, and you got that you had that chart that you looked at.
I was about to ask everybody what they thought before we said we do it today. All right?
Yeah,
I absolutely think it should say basic benefit package because that's what we're talking about. It can be a basic benefit package of a particular nature, but what we're talking about is this is the basic benefit package that underlies any health insurance, and there can be others that can be different than that can be more than this. But the basic benefit package can end up being defined however you want to define it, in the nature of the health fund board language or any other way. But, I mean, I think the only essential characteristic we're talking about is that it be the baseline for all health insurance.
And I would agree, because if you have the disease or you have the problem that's not covered by that basic benefit plan, it all of a sudden becomes essential for you. It may not be essential for most of the population.
Well, the only point I was making is that when they say here's the basic benefit package, it could take exactly the nature of what the benefit committee of the health fund board said this should be the basic benefit package. It should look like this, what they call an essential benefit package. Or it could end up being something else. It could be the Medicaid package. It could be, I mean, I think it could turn out being any number of other things. I don't really think the health fund board adopted that part of the report.
They did not.
They did not.
They did
specifically
not.
Did not adopt that.
For the same reason why I think you were having trouble.
That we're having this discussion here.
Well, it's because it's charged. And we always put that conversation off to tomorrow.
Or maybe in this case to 13. Instead of 11, 2013.
If the chair is so inclined to use the word basic, I would only agree to that if we actually define what we mean by basic somewhere in this bill to meet the principles that were adopted by the health fund board as a result of the work in the benefits subcommittee.
Well, then let's get the final report of the health fund board and see what they did adopt as a board. Did we get some testimony on that from somebody?
And we've emailed it
they're
to
looking.
You
they're
previously.
Well, no, we have the report. The question is, what did... It was my impression that the board did not adopt that notion.
Yeah, and I have that.
Dr. Smith, you want to join us? Or you want to send somebody else to take the heat?
It may take us a minute to find this.
Mr. Chair, how about that list that we went over the other
day?
Yeah,
exactly.
That was
the
report of the
health fund. Chair Greenlake, Representative Dembro, what you received from Tom for that day to look at were the principles that were from the final report, which is where the health fund board took it, was we wanted more work based on the work the committee had done, but these were the principles around an essential benefit package. And I'm Janine Smith, the administrator for the Office of Health Policy.
Thank you
very much.
So, it was very helpful. We saw what the language
It was sent out to you.
It's what was referred to as new section.
Yes.
But it was actually the health fund board recommendation on the essential package.
I wasn't sure if it was the health fund board recommendation or the recommendation of the benefits subcommittee of the health fund board.
Chair Greenlake, Representative Dembro, members of the committee. What was in the report is it was item A through G that were on this new section, and that was what was in the final report.
And in the appendix or in the body of the report?
That was in the body
in
of
the
report.
Okay.
And then the other materials you reviewed were the more detailed work that the committee had done.
I'm sorry, A through J.
Through G.
G.
A through G was in the report.
On this?
Yes.
Thursday's or on the previous one, not today's. This was Wednesday's. This was the report.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Straight out of the report, right?
Yeah.
And perhaps this is something the principles are included in the exchange section as something as part of the exchange conversation. If that seems like the right home for it, I just don't think we should lose the work of that subcommittee in attempting to say this is not just about the services you receive. It's how do those services relate to cost? How does that relate to quality? That's all. I mean,
How about putting in the paragraph on the top without putting in the discussion of it?
Chair, Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, do you need...
Oh, wait a minute. All health insurance plans often say must meet and exceed.
Yeah, that's...
Because in Massachusetts, they have a minimal credible coverage package that in order... So if you are going to have a mandate, you have to... Eventually, you'll have to have some thing that says, you know, yes, I have insurance through PEB that meets mandate. You know, you have to meet some benchmark. And so this, again, the essential benefit package was Oregon's attempt to try to come up with what that might be. Massachusetts has their version of it. But when you build an exchange, you have to come up with sort of a standard that then you say whether somebody is getting an insurance, fulfilling their individual mandate or not.
And, Mr. Chair, the words... because this came out of the Health Fund Board and they were looking, as Dr. Smith said, at the broad picture, this language and what we're focusing on is just the discussion around what's going to occur in the exchange. And I think that's a policy discussion you need to decide, but we have attempted to craft this to only impact what's sold within the exchange because we're not ready to talk about the second steps about a mandate.
Representative Thompson?
I don't want to add another element here, but... I think we're discussing semantics more than anything here because the difference or what's in the essential or basic package is going to be defined by its contents, which is the function of the board. So the basic package will be whatever the board includes as covered conditions plus any additional expectations put on the patient. And I'm not sure we can define that at this time because... As a patient, I may look at it and say I want to see whether or not dental is part of the essential package. Because it is the essential package, doesn't tell me dental is or is not covered. And that so that terminology isn't meaningful in a what kind of coverage am I going to get context. Maybe we should just leave that, kind of adopt one or the other, and leave that open to discussion design by the board as to what is germane at the time and what they can afford.
Mr. Denver?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I agree that we don't want to be overly specific in terms of what will be in the basic plan. That's up to the process. But I do think that A through G really set out important aspirational language that the board should, as it says here, consider in putting together this basic plan. And I think it's important that these principles be somewhere within this bill, whether it's in Section 10 or the section on the exchange, somewhere. I think we just have to figure out where to put it.
Representative Cannon?
My view, based on the discussion we had earlier in the week, is similar to that spoken by Representative Dembro, that I see B through G, and I think A is in a somewhat different category, but B through G, at least, as an attempt to put some goals around the cost-sharing mechanism or cost-sharing approach to a basic benefits package. Cost-sharing being the way that, according to the work of the Health Fund Board's committee, we help incentivize the right, you know, what we know to be the most cost-effective services. There's nothing related to that in the opening paragraph. So I think some of these conditions, primarily B through G, in my view, A should be somewhere else, but do really get at that important work that the benefits the subcommittee did related to how a basic benefits package would look.
All right. How about we leave J as it is, J in Section 10, and we do that sentence that says when creating the benefit package, not get into a word in front of that, the board should take into consideration the following, and then do B through G.
Mr. Chair, this goes back to a question I had on Wednesday. Do we want to say that the board shall take into consideration 1 through 5, or do we want to say the essential benefit package shall embody the following principles, 1 through 5? There's a difference between those two. And I think this language represents a high-level policy judgment that it's appropriate for us to make and direct be implemented, not just to say these should be considered.
Well, the health fund board came up with just you should consider.
Mr. Chair, I have it's page 34 of the report where they say the essential benefits package will include the following considerations. Now, that's
and
a
somebody took the word.
Yeah, I like take into consideration better. I like to take into consider. See what it means, take into consideration.
I think they struggle with this issue, which is why they kind of got it both ways. Will include the following considerations. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah. And then it has the A through G.
Mr. Chair, I like the language that Representative Garrett suggested in terms of, I forget how you put it, but embodied
suggested
principles.
Both elements. Yeah, he gave you two opposites.
Which one did you like? I prefer the one that I like, Mr. Chair.
You have to remember which one that was. Representative Garrett, will you try what you just did?
Well, maybe I was going at some middle ground here, which is to say...
I would hope so.
Be prescriptive and say, we want the package to embody the following principles. And I would be okay with condensing what we see here in B through G. But to me, the core, this is about linking cost sharing to cost effectiveness. And I think that should be stated in here. I think we're ready to say that's what we want. I don't think we need to leave that open.
Well, that is D, right?
Right.
D is, I think, a pretty nice statement of that principle.
And it may not be important that we mention the phrase integrated health home. I don't even know if that's defined anywhere in this bill.
It isn't really.
So maybe that can come out. That's fairly specific. Maybe more so than we need.
I think there's going to be some people that would have a real problem with that. Wait, let me take this. We can be considering it. Let me take the prerogative of the chair. Did you say gavel amendments to the table or something? Tom's teaching me how to do it a Willie Brown style from California. Who he worked for too long. I would suggest let's leave J as it is here and add B through G as when creating the EBP board, the board shall... All right, here's your chance. One or the other.
Absolutely.
The board shall...
Absolutely. Garrett.
No left turn only? Is this where we are?
Shall embody the principles.
Well, that's the language.
I said the
plan should embody the following principles.
The package.
The package should embody the following
when
principles.
When creating the package should embody the following
will.
Principles. That's
right.
Fine.
That's the language I use.
Don't would, should it.
Will. Well, that's when creating.
Might.
Think about
absolutely
it.
Absolutely may.
Aggressively.
I say the board shall embody...
Yeah.
The following, whether they're principles or not, right. And include A through G.
May I?
A or B?
Want to take a run?
No.
Mr. Chair, A or B? You said
B, that, sorry, B through,
B through G.
G.
Yeah.
All right. Now, can I look at E? Reward patients for actively participating in their own care. Can I change rewards to incentivize? Because reward, there's positive and negative reinforcements. And incentivizing assumes that you possibly could consider both.
There are positive and negative rewards, though, right? Well, I mean, but incentivize?
To me, reward incentivize leaves open.
Incentivize patients to actively participate in their own care.
In their care and wellness. And just besides care, I would say, and wellness.
That's right.
How can you participate in your own wellness?
Not smoke.
I'll drink to
on
that
a daily
one.
Basis.
my run ride a day.
Actually, I think that Representative Maurer is making a good point. The wellness.
If an insurance company is willing to pay for your annual membership to Club Northwest and Grants Pass. And they think they're getting their bang for their buck for it, then I think that should be that. To me, that's wellness, less about care. Care to me is you measure your...
I'm not arguing with the principal. I'm talking about the participating in their own wellness. It's not what we want.
Okay.
So what word?
No, I don't care.
Let's get a word that makes...
Go. You want to put in incentivize?
I would just say incentivize, and you can drop the other part. And if not, I can go on.
We can find a word that goes with that. To participate in their own care and...
Maintaining their own wellness.
Maintenance of health. Maintaining their health.
Yeah. All right.
Whatever.
Between
whatever.
Now and Monday, when this is going to the LC, if anybody has a proposal to tell Tom how to do that, we'll do it. But it will have all those things in it. They will be under J. We still have 54 and a half minutes.
It goes quick after this.
And develop policies to govern the insurance exchange established in 18.
Yeah.
Okay?
We'll skip K.
Let's go to the back of the page now.
Two-sided, are we?
This is the only one that... Oh, no, Bill. Do they all have two sides? They mostly all have two sides. All right, Tom, let's roll.
Mr. Chair, continuing K, develop policies to govern the insurance exchange established in 11 and defined in 18. I suggest you hold that discussion until you get to Section 18.
I'm sorry. What? I thought we were J.
Oh,
how many J's do we have?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
there's
J.
a lot of J's.
J, K, and then a bunch of other J's, right?
Yes.
This is still Section 1.
This is still Section 1.
Still Section...
Right, we're on Section 10.
I'm sorry, Section 10, subsection,
subsection 1.
Yeah, this is still Subsection 1.
Right.
The bottom of the first page, front of the first page.
No, we're at the top of the next page.
Like I said...
First J on the second page.
Correct.
The first J, which is the second J of the in Section
right.
1.
Not to be confused.
That's J, K, L, right?
L.
Should be L.
L and M.
Okay. L, Mr. Chairman, is the implementation of a publicly owned health plan that operates in the exchange under the same rules and regulations as the rest of the insurance market. It has been suggested that we need to put a date on here, because you can't really open the exchange without a public health option, and it would make sure that the board completes the work on this by a specific date.
Is there a date?
December 31st of
2010. Yeah.
So the Legislative Assembly can deal with it.
Yes. M, Mr. Chair, is looking long-term down the road, trying to figure out how we're going to meet the goals that you set up in number B about everybody having health insurance by 2015. Ask the board to examine a requirement that every resident have health coverage, a payroll tax as a means to encourage continued health insurance by employers. Should the exchange be expanded beyond what's originally envisioned, and a system of interoperable health electronic records utilized by healthcare providers.
I need to go back to the previous one. I'm sorry, to the first L, mm-hmm. top statement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's the only L.
I'm JK. The only L. Sorry. I mean that development and to develop and implement a publicly owned health plan. In and of itself is a reason to vote against 2009. I just have a problem with a publicly owned health plan.
So noted.
Essentially, and okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Can we?
Anything else to say about it?
Nope.
Okay.
We'll just making a comment.
Okay.
M.
M is okay. Again, investigate and report the legislature as a means to, this really is as a means to achieve our goal of 2015 and putting some boxes around what that looks like.
Well, or these are any other things.
And anything else that they
Here's
want
some
to.
Things to think
yeah.
about and anything else you want to
Including
think about.
Including but not limited to.
Then it's investigate and report on
right.
feasibility and advisability. That's pretty open.
Okay.
Two.
The board, okay, so what we've done is the board shall, now we're doing the board is authorized, to undertake joint contracting for health services entities in the listed in the Public Health Employer Coalition that you worked on Monday. in further discussions with the coalition that brought that proposal to you on Monday, it's become clear that this language does not belong here. It goes beyond where they would like it to go, that they want the coalition to come up with how to do a joint contracting, and it is their recommendation that this language be taken out of here at this point.
I think it makes sense to leave it in there, and the coalition is how this might come about, if it is going to come about. I think we should leave it in.
Mr. Chair, maybe Tom, you can remind us of who participates now in the Public Health Employer Coalition.
That was the one that has PEB, OEB, cities, counties, local governments, nonprofit agencies.
Publicly funded nonprofit.
I thought the legislative intent was not to necessarily pull on the cities and the counties right now.
No, but they're not pulled into the plan right now. They're pulled into the public the purchasers.
The exchange.
Coalition. No, it's a committee reporting to the board.
The way this language is they're pulled in, and that's the concern. Undertake
which languages?
2A, undertaking joint contracting for health care services on behalf of the entities participating in the health employer coalition.
I see the issue.
And that's their concern. They're not ready to get there. I mean, they ultimately recognize that's probably where we're going to end up. But this says do it now and do it by the 11-13 session. And their point is there's a whole host of things that have to be planned, like local government collective bargaining agreements, timing.
I would just take out the Tom. They joint contracting on behalf of public entities participating. It doesn't say all of them. It just says on behalf of them.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that solves the problem. I mean, what we're looking at is the coalition is going to be meeting and making recommendations, which then, and which will be done in time for the next legislature.
It doesn't say that anywhere.
Well, but I think
anywhere but here. The coalition can't be making recommendations. The coalition can be making recommendations to the board.
They're going to make recommendations to the board.
And this is the board's responsibility now to create the ability to do joint contracting.
And I mean, we're hoping that the coalition will give them.
Let's make it this way: on behalf of public entities, period. Take out the participating in the Public Health Employer Coalition.
Mr. Chair, may I clarify something? So, if you look at the rest of Section 10, Sub 2, to the rest of that, my guess is this section is to make sure for contingencies. Is that because you look at the other language here? The problem I have with 2A, now I think it has to be revised in light of the other work we were doing, it doesn't seem to fit here. So is your goal here, if on the off chance between now and the 2011 session, some reason the board needs to undertake joint contracting on something, you want to give them that authority?
Yes. That's exactly.
Is it specific to this? Because I think that's premature because we've set up a process to determine what that might look like. If you just want to say they're authorized to undertake joint contracting for health care services on behalf of public entities, period, like you were suggesting, I think that makes a little more sense. It's open-ended. If it had to happen, it doesn't say it's going to happen. They're just authorized to do it if they need to.
That's what I propose. Undertake joint contracting for health care services on behalf of public entities.
Period. Maybe it's the period there.
Beginning for the 2011 biennium. Take out the and take out participating in the Public Health Employers Coalition. Somebody gives them the authority to do this if it is determined that it's useful to do.
Absolutely. If AOC came to the authority and somewhere in the biennium and said, we really want to do this, the authority could say, we have the authority to do this contracting. That could happen.
Or if PEB and OEB simply
said.
Or
if PEB and OEB said, right.
They want to have the joint authority. That's all it's intended to do, is to give it the authority.
So a period after entities, then? Is that the idea?
No, a comma after. Wait a minute.
Strike the.
Get rid of the and just.
Leave it beginning for the 2003 biennium.
So I would take the date off, right?
You mean give them authority to do it even before that, huh?
Well, just whenever.
Okay.
They have the authority.
Okay.
I wouldn't even reference the group. I think it's just undertake joint contracting for health care services on behalf of public entities, period.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's go.
Thank
okay.
you, Mr. Chair.
2B is not, no, 2B is give the board the authority to reorganize, gives the board the power to reorganize the authority subject to approval by the governor. C specifically authorizes the board that they may pre-session file any changes to OR statutes that they need.
The rest is all boilerplate.
The
right?
rest is generally boilerplate, yeah. They need duties. They need the first one is they can come back to you for legislative authority. Number four is language.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I hate to do this to you. Can I backtrack a bit?
Sure.
Back up to L, top of the page. We've had some discussions about the exchange and the timing of the exchange. And aren't we saying in that that we're the exchange is going now, even though that's unsettled at this point?
Let's see what we say when we get to that in 18.
I'd suggest you have that discussion in 18 and conform this to what you decide you want to do in 18. Okay. So that's the duties of the board. The authority is Section 11 is everything about the authority. The authority is established, and it shall carry out the policies of the health board.
Let's go to 20.
You want to go to 20?
Yeah, you say the authority is established. Let's stop for a moment and go to 20 and say what the authority is.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Section 20 is designed to define what portions of government that currently exist will be moved into the authority. And so the first one starts out with all duties, powers of the Department of Human Services with respect to health are imposed upon, transferred, and invested in the authority, including but not limited to policy for medical assistance for long-term care, home and community.
No, medical assistance, except for,
I'm sorry, thank you. Except for long-term care, home and community-based, residential care, developmental disabilities, and physical disabilities. Now, I do need to tell you that there is some concern about the way this language is written. The concern is that the developmentally disabled and the people with disabilities get their health care from Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And you could argue the way this is written that they would no longer be able to do that. There is new language that we have looked at. Pardon?
And we had that language somewhere.
It was on an amendment
It's on an amendment request, and I'm going to read you how that. Instead of A, the way it is, it would read, develop the policies for and the delivery of health care to anyone eligible for state-sponsored medical care. That gets everybody who's Medicaid, the board, the authority will run. However, the policies for non-medical services for those individuals in long-term care, home and community-based care, residential care, people with disabilities, and people with developmental abilities shall remain in the Department of Human Services. I don't think that's the way it will be written, but that's what I want to give Lori.
That's what
and let her
to tell her.
Yeah, because that way the health stuff comes over, but the other services for that list stay in human services.
Tom, in the second line of one, I think I should read health and health care. I think it did in a previous.
Home and community-based health and health care?
No. Powers of the Department of Human Services with respect to health and health care.
Health and health care, okay.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that. The proposed amendment that we're hearing on item 1A. So.
That is the intention.
That is the intention. And we've tried three or four iterations to make it work, and this was a brilliant idea that someone else came up with. I can't claim it.
Mr. Chair,
just a comment, and we talked about it before, and I'm not sure what the right vehicle for this is, but a fear I have that we talked about weeks ago with the divestiture, if you will, of the DHS is not actually ending the expenditures that are related to health and health care. I would love it if somewhere in this, if it's Section 20, we make a point that expenditures at DHS related to health and health care expense stop. So we don't have parallel yeah. systems without yeah. a need to have parallel systems.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bruin, I think if you look at 3 on the bottom of that page, you will see where it's designed to do that. It's designed to say that it must be accomplished by June of 2011 and that in creating the next biennium budget, that the funding has shifted out of it and implemented it that way.
I mean, it gets at it. I don't think it says it.
Okay.
I would suggest we put a finer point on it.
In number 3.
The budgets of...
Whether it's 3 or up above in the within number within the section 1.
I'm. We need to defer to Representative Kotek on this, but I'm beginning to get an inkling of how the DHS budget works, and it's by categories with the CAF and the whatever else they are. I think when we move, Representative Kotek, when we move the department, the functions, don't we move the budget with them?
I'm not sure that that's explicit. I hear what Representative Bruin is saying. I guess that's a question for LC. Does powers also mean money? In my mind, it's like you don't have any powers if you don't have any money, so I don't know if I'm missing something there, but that might... I don't know how they yeah. interpret duties, functions, and powers and how that relates to budget. Yeah.
And
but if it doesn't, I say we put money in there somewhere, but yeah. I just don't know.
I'll put a question no, here for yeah, LC yeah. and yeah. say, make sure that the okay. dollars follow them over to the new authority.
And well, and Bruce always... Dr. Goldberg also proposed that sometimes the health agency can buy services from DHS so as not to have to duplicate services, right. that there would be a way to work that out that you don't need to do. I mean, they're both buying it from DAS, but the prime example is that we're not taking over the Medicaid eligibility work right. from children and families. That's staying where it is. So funds for that would stay where it is as a...
Or they could do an intergovernment. They could do a fund shift or fund transfer.
Right. Go on, sir.
Okay. B, ensure the promotion and protection of public health and the licensing of healthcare facilities. Again, trying to bring this that portion of DHS over. C, developing the policies for the provision of mental health treatment and treatment for substance abuse. Bring that over. Bring over the OPDP program, Oregon Prescription Drug Program. Bring over the Office of Policy and Research and all the functions of that office, so Bruce will continue to have the policy of Dr. Smith. And then...
Well, that assumes she brings Bruce with her.
So that's those are all coming out of the Department of Human Services. Then there are 2 agencies that are in DAS, and that's PEB and OEB, and the goal is to bring them over into the authority. And then
I think that Mr. Chair,
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think
just go.
DAS we know is omnipotent, right? So if we say all duties, functions, and powers of DAS with respect to these things, it's very broad. It assumes IT and IS responsibilities and other things. So we need
yeah.
some sort of limiting language
yeah,
in
absolutely.
Here.
Yeah, make that note for
yeah.
the LC. That's yeah. It really isn't all of
you want the functioning powers, the policy powers.
Representative Harker is on the General Government Subcommittee of Ways and Means, so he wants to make sure he keeps busy with looking at the DAS budget, right?
First clause was accurate, your second was not.
Yeah, that's very important. We're obviously yeah. not moving all duties
right.
and powers with respect
right.
to these.
Right.
We're just moving these. I mean, right now, there's a line from PEB to the PEB board to DAS, and there's a line from OEB to the OEB board to DAS, and I'm talking about moving those lines.
Yeah,
so
that's
I mean,
exactly
it actually
what it
doesn't
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, move the
that's
lines.
That's important.
Okay. 3, as we talked about, is the budget, and we'll come up with some words for Lori per Representative Bruin's request. 4 is the... a power to establish health insurance rates.
This is too broad for the
it
same reason.
It is way too broad here.
Yeah.
And
we have language somewhere else on that, right?
We do not. We have had various drafts of language.
Okay.
We threw it all out to start over. And
okay.
I think that really you want to make that decision based,
some work on this one.
Based on what you want to do about exactly how much power the authority has to regulate insurance rates.
I think we're giving them the power to regulate insurance rates, right? We'll get to that in a minute. And they need as much authority as they need to do that, but we're talking about the duties and functions of
right.
this whole process being in the staying in DCBS.
Right.
So we need to get that carefully worded.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
The section we haven't gotten to yet talks about the exchange working in consultation with DCBS to regulate rates. I'm wondering if, in light of that, we even need this language in subsection 4.
You know, maybe we don't, huh?
It may be that we don't, because the other language says regulate in consultation with DCBS the sale transactions health policy.
I think you're right. Let's just delete this.
I think we could.
It's gone.
Okay. 5 is moving the Office of Private Health Partnership and the Family Health Insurance Plans over. 6 is the medical insurance pool and the funding for that. 7 is the Health Insurance Advisory Committee is eliminated because the authority is basically taking over all that duty to review that. And the Health Policy Commission is also abolished.
Isn't eliminated a little nicer than abolished? Abolished sounds so...
It was already, this is Lori's words, not mine.
Okay. And
question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
The health fund board, did that, or does that sunset?
That sunsets.
That sunsets automatically on July 1st.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we don't,
I have to close that last one. Won't have a reason to drive to Portland and have coffee with you.
Yeah, if you showed up once in a while.
A 5-minute drive for you a 4-hour drive for
you. You can come and have coffee with me anytime. You don't need an excuse.
Mr. Chair, I suggest you go back to Section 11.
Okay,
and we can run
go.
Through this very quickly. We started with it. Carry out the policies, establish the Quality Care Institute, establish the Health Insurance Exchange, which we'll talk about in a minute, OPDP, reports, community-based, community-centered health initiatives, be the Medicaid agency, H. Regulate in consultation with the director of DCBS.
Dan. Wait a minute, what?
We want to go back to G?
No, F, please.
F.
We talked about taking out the word behavioral in the second sentence there.
Critical risk factors?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Thank you.
Okay.
We did talk about taking it out.
Yes, we did.
I'm watching you.
I apologize.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Trying to juggle enough paper, sometimes something gets missed.
That's quite all right.
H, Mr. Chair, regulate in consultation with DCBS the sale and transaction of all policies of health insurance in the state, including but not limited to approval of rates and enforcement of rating rules.
Oh,
yes, sir.
I just want to clarify what we're doing about the relationship between mm-hmm. the authority and DCBS. With the omission of Section 24, where we transfer duties, functions, and powers, and the emphasis on consultation with DCBS, I don't, as I read this, see positions moving from DCBS to the health authority. I see the health authority with staff people who are consulting with staff people at DCBS when it comes to the regulation of health insurance. If that's the intent, probably fine with that, but it's significantly different than the way I think this was presented to us initially. And I know DCBS had a whole lot of concerns about the pulling in health insurance regulation wholesale out of their agency.
I think it's inevitable that when the budgeting comes up, there'll need to be some staff in the health authority to be dealing with this. But the whole question of how you process the claims, the rate reviews, the rate structures, all that kind of stuff. The intention was to leave that in DCBS and have the analysis come over for final decisions in the authority rather than DCBS.
I would only suggest that it may, this may be inevitable, but it does present at least the appearance potentially of some duplicativity. Made that up. It's not duplicity because that's lying. Duplication.
Duplicativity. I like that one. That's a good one.
Duplicative activity.
That's apposite.
That's Friday afternoon.
I think we need to make sure. I mean, I think there is probably going to be some, but we really want to try and minimize it. And at the operations level, we hope that the operations work will take place at DCBS. The policy level and some decision level, you're going to obviously need some staff to do that, but I envision a model, and we can talk about it when we get the final amendments. I see Ms. Miller in the audience about how this could actually work in a way that would enhance the work of both agencies instead of slow down the work of both agencies. Mm. I think the legislative intent is clear here.
Okay. We're going to leave that the way it is. Okay. So those are what the authority shall do. Now we're moving into what the authority is authorized to do. And this is another one of the placeholders. Create an all-claims database to collect health data from insurers and other state agencies to assess insurer health plan and health network information. This is the all-claims, all-payer database. It's moving in other vehicles. This is a placeholder to allow them to do that should the other vehicles not work, and we can the other vehicles can define it.
Tom, B here seems like a weird place to have it after having done what we're doing in H above, doesn't it?
Mr. Chair, this is a desire on the part of the advocates to specifically look at the administrative costs associated with the health insurance. The concern goes something like this. 10 years ago, administrative costs in the insurance market, insurance businesses were 10% of a premium. But it is still 10% of a premium.
Yeah, but how can that not be a part of what we've established up above?
It can be. There is a desire on part of people to make sure the words administrative costs appear in this bill.
I recognize. I note that desire. Is that right?
Okay.
Do it both ways, right? So noted. I would take it out. I think it's inevitable that this happened as a part of H. And I would hope that's what. If we were going to put some language in it, I'd put it up in H, not here.
Okay.
That means something like approval of rates, including analysis of the increase in administrative expenses. I don't think the administrative issue, I don't think that's the huge issue, frankly. I think the issue is the rates. I don't think the issue is the administrative costs. That's my personal view on it.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I actually, if we can, if you're not comfortable leaving B where it is, I'd like to at least pull that out somewhere if it is an H. I mean, it's very likely that, I think the important thing is methodologies and standards.
Yeah.
You know,
but
maybe
I would say,
we would never deny
I would say it would be develop methodologies and standards for reviewing health insurance rates or health insurance rate increases. The obvious smallest piece of a health insurance rate increase is the increase in administrative costs, which in most of our health insurers is 8 to 10%. So it goes up the same 15%, that 8 to 10%. I think it's the base of the problem. I mean, I think it's, we have big problems. I think when Blue Cross raises the rates 27%, we're looking at more than the administrative costs.
And I would agree with that. I think there's a public perception, however, that administrative expenses are excessive. And if we were able to at least recognize to the general public that we're watching this, ultimately perhaps not the problem. Perhaps this would just be developing methodologies, but I think there is a perception that that is a problem.
Yes, there is.
So
I recognize that.
Would it, Mr. Chair, would it work to take the first part of that sentence and move it into H as a third duty or you know what the authority
put it under H, but I would say develop methodologies and standards for reviewing
the administrative expenses
for reviewing health insurance rates and deny rate increases upon excessive expenses in the premiums. I mean I'm afraid if you put this in here that's what it focuses the action on. I don't think that's where the action is. It's my own personal assessment of it, but I think this is a minimum part of the question. And I can tell you that the agencies that we would regulate on this would love us to only look at administrative rates. That seems to me to be a weak tool.
I My comment to that is, if we only looked at administrative rates for SAFE, which has been, by most accounts, a successful model, then we would not have what we have today, because they have rates that exceed 20%. But yet, that administration has really, in effect, been the ability of them to manage their programs and reduce premium rates for the people that are writing checks. So I would agree. And it's about rates. It's not administration. Yeah.
This is one of the factors in a rate. Another factor is and it's what I'd be asking about SAFE, is how come they have such a big surplus? I mean, that's exactly the sort of thing I would be looking at. And I would be looking at how they at what their loss ratio is. I mean, you're going to come in here and raise your rates and you have a 25% loss ratio when other plans have a 75% loss ratio? Wait a minute, let's talk about that. I just think this trivializes what I think has got to be an important issue. I have no problem with having a list of things they look at, including this, but to call this out, and I understand the advocates feel very strongly about it, I just think it misses the point. Let's see if we can craft some language between now again and Monday, Tom, that moves this up into two and puts reviews of administrative rates as a piece of things, including loss ratios, administrative rates, reserves, which is what I think that is done now, but I think we should I think we should call it out in combination with other things. Does that feel okay if we do it that way?
Sure. I think it's going to be more explosive and fun, but I'm game.
It is going to be more explosive, you say? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, if you want to turn the page, you have the next.
Before we turn the page,
nice try. I have annotations. It's like you turn the page for me, but I put a few notes in here for me to talk from.
Representative Garrett, do you have something to say on item C?
What makes you think that, Mr. Chair?
I'd heard that.
I guess I have reservations about including C within this. And it's not because I'm opposed to having the authority look at that. I think part of their job is going to be to look and see what works in other states, and Maryland's one of the states. So this is fine to have be explored, but I'm concerned that by calling this out and making this an explicit suggestion, we divert attention from what I think is more meaningful cost containment that we are doing in this bill. Price controls are a fairly extreme approach to take, and I'm not saying altogether inappropriate, but I think we're doing some real good work here on cost containment. I'd like to see that have a chance to succeed, and I think if we believe that that is going to succeed, if we believe that's meaningful cost containment, calling for price controls here undermines that.
Mr. Chair,
may I add on that? I couldn't agree more with Rep. Garrett, and I think there's a pretty solid American track record of price controls failing in whatever environment they're in. So I agree wholeheartedly with Rep. Garrett.
Mr. Chair, I might also...
You can debate this without having to agree to that statement.
No, that's my own personal, but...
Mr. Chair, there's also some concern that I've heard that the way this language is written, it's only looking at price increases, and it's not examining the underlying base of health care costs.
Mr. Chair, would you be open to revising this substantially and talking about the health authority may pursue establishing a global health care budget for the state of Oregon?
Here's what I would propose we do. I would propose
global healthcare budget.
I would propose we eliminate this and get folks to come back with a specific amendment proposal to see what we can do. I think calling out the notion that we ought to be dealing with price, with the price of healthcare, is an important issue, and see if we can find a way to get it started. But let's not do it within this set of amendments.
So at this point, C is eliminated?
My recommendation is we eliminate C and bring it back in our discussions as a specific amendment.
Okay.
Which we can consider rather than trying to do it now. Now you can turn your page, Tom.
Continuing, Mr. Chair, D, establish,
exactly.
Again, these are duties the authority may do, the authority is authorized to do, establish a statewide drug formulary, develop uniform contracting standards.
Establish a statewide drug formulary, does that mean, would that be interpreted that everybody would have to use it, mm-hmm. or they could just say, I could see a formulary assigned to, say, your essential benefit package.
Yeah, that's what I think it talks to, state purchases. And I would say establish a drug formulary for use with the state purchase of health care.
Public purchase of healthcare. Okay.
Other people could use it. It's out there. But I think the intention, I believe the intention of it was to deal with the public purchasing side.
It also allows people to understand that the state has looked at the various drugs, has identified some drugs as better or worse than others, and have said this is sort of the ideal formulary out there. Whether people choose to follow it or not would be their choice.
I would almost suggest that the state probably doesn't have the expertise to say to establish a formulary other than essentially using other people's work.
We do use other people's work. We're in interstate compacts for doing exactly this. And in fact, I think we have created a preferred drug list under OPDP and the Medicaid program, but that we've not been allowed to turn it into a formulary. And I think it's probably pretty good, I think.
Okay.
Jim, you had a chance to?
I won't comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have enough data, so.
But that is the intention here.
Yeah.
It's, I think, the statewide drug formula. I think we're talking about establish a drug formulary for use in
public purchases. Yeah. E is develop uniform contracting standards as a means to get uniform quality performance measures, evidence-based guidelines around chronic diseases, and comparative effective guidelines for select new technologies.
Is this where the drug formulary goes?
No, the drug formulary stands alone.
Okay. You sure?
No.
This is what we're talking about here, right?
It can go in either one.
But it can go nicely here.
It can go in either one.
And then it makes clear what it is we're talking about.
Probably does go. Yeah. And then pre-session file and the usual boilerplate that whatever duties are here are not the limit of whatever the duties that the authority uses to do, which council put in. Mr. Chair, you have 19 minutes in which to talk about the exchange.
Piece of cake.
Plenty of time.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, before we do that, Tom, going back to Section 10, I'm sorry, we had talked about
there.
Putting in a piece on workforce.
I'm sorry, Section 10.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Right.
yes, Mr. Dembro, thank you. As you recall, Section 8 used to have three subcommittees in it that we looked at once and said we're not going to have it. We've now added back the Public Employee Benefits Subcommittee. There was also a Health Care Workforce Council in there to ensure that Oregon's healthcare workforce is sufficient in numbers and training to meet the demand that will be created by the expansion of health coverage, system transformations, and the increasing diverse population. It has been suggested that we really do need to put that committee back in, as essentially it's a subcommittee of the full board, as a means to have a group to focus on the needs for workforce. We're probably going to need to come up with some more language to expand what the definition of the workforce is, but it is suggested that that go in there, and that would be added to Section 8 of the bill.
Yes, and, Mr. Chair, I was also thinking that we might want to call that out in Section 10 among the duties of the Health Authority Board to, ensure that Oregon has the workforce needed to deliver quality care throughout the state.
Would you get Thompson language over the weekend?
Yeah, and Alex.
I think it's in your email box.
Thank you.
Oh, you already have language?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
I knew it was coming. I just didn't have it by the time I walked out of the... Yeah, yeah.
Section 18.
Section 18. The exchange was established in Section 11. This goes on to say it's created in the health authority. The duties and responsibilities...
Can I ask a question? Are we saying that the exchange, it's going to be created, or that the Oregon Health Authority should present a plan to create the exchange?
I think we're saying the exchange is created in law, but it's an empty shell, and that now the board needs to create a plan to present to the legislature for how it works.
Can I ask what the benefit of the empty shell is, if there's nothing inside of it?
It's a positive statement that it's there, rather than getting an argument about whether it should be there. You can always delete it, or you can always not accept the plan. I think to honor the intent of the health fund board, I think establishing it is
an appropriate thing. The language says that they're going to create the exchange, and then they're only going to come talk to us.
The authority is created, it says.
Yes, but they're only going to come talk to us if they think they need additional statutory authority to move forward.
It says the duties and responsibilities of the exchange shall be developed by the authority board in consultation with the director and reported to the legislature no later than December 31st.
Okay. And then should the board find that legislation is needed to affect the duties and responsibility, they can pre-session file.
But at that point, the legislature could stop him or not.
Well, we could always stop anything.
Yeah.
Well, theoretically.
Mr. Prove Chair.
It's a very conservative operation we have. We keep things in place unless we stop. Mm-hmm. Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking. So the... Haven't we taken care of the ability of the board to pre-session file? Why do we need it again?
Redundancy is helpful.
We don't need it again.
We don't need it again.
Well, if that particular sentence is causing angst, I think the fact that we can pre-session on anything we're working on, I think
It isn't a pre-session file. It's that in its plan, it's going to say we need to have these statutory changes in order to do what we're doing. And that's what we would like pre-session filed so that it can be considered in the 2000. I don't see how the authority can do anything in the current statutory environment. It's going to need statutes to do, I think.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the example that we've talked about of a shopping mall may be appropriate at this point, and if I might use that. I think what the thought was is that we would create the exchange and call it a shopping mall. There will be four walls, a roof, parking, electric, lights, doors, whatever. If you open that exchange the day after this bill passes and look inside, you would find a bunch of stores, but nobody in the stores, and obviously no customers because there's nobody in the stores. 6 months from now, it may be that it becomes clear that by moving the PEB and OEB, who are the two closest groups, into the exchange would make sense. And so the exchange is there, and if it makes sense to do that, then they can move that group in. As they continue, as they come up with a publicly funded health, publicly owned health plan, that could be a store. And that may open up in 12 months or
what? Except I really don't see, I mean, I think you might be able to build that exchange, but the city code would say before you can put a store in, you need to come back and get approval.
And that's what three and
that's
four
what I think. I mean, I don't think they could put PEB and OEB into that exchange simply because you've created it. It seems to me you would need statutory authority to do anything except have those buildings there. I don't think you put lights in.
Mr. Chair, we are the writers of the city code, right?
We are.
I mean, there is no real city code in place.
There is none, and I don't believe you could build something without that code. That's exactly my point.
Right.
Why start it now and not start it? It could just as easily have been establish it as a part of that plan. It just seemed to me this, what we're trying to do is honor what the health fund board wanted, and I think this is a symbolic step at honoring it. I don't think it can do anything without without that plan.
The health fund board was, its mission was to create a plan to come back to us, and so we look at that. It's not a matter of honoring their wishes. It's a matter of what's the right thing to do.
Let me suggest we bypass this issue and see if the rest of I am going to gavel out of five. Let's see if the rest of the things on here make sense.
So the duties,
one way or the other,
the duties and responsibilities will be developed in consultation with DCBS and come back to the legislature in 2011 biennium. When developing the duties, the authority shall take into account the following: how to staff it, how to fund it, what the administration is going to be, how to price and select plans offered through the exchange, underwriting and rating criterions, including community rating and guaranteed issue, what role the public purchasers are going to play into it, how you're going to have a transition or rollover, how to enforce rules, and one that got left off here is the role of insurance producers, which is another word for saying the current brokers in the insurance market that was in the original discussions.
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
I think it's appropriate there be some mention tie-in here to the essential benefits package, because if I've or basic benefits package, if I've understood our discussion correctly, that is the basic benefits package is the sort of minimum square footage requirement for each store in the shopping mall. It's the rules about the type of lighting and types of goods that stores in the...
Yeah, it's in B, right?
Each needs to carry.
Well,
and that's where it should be.
That's B is... I'm not sure gets it. I think what Representative Cannon is suggesting is that we reference specifically the essential benefit package as sort of... It has to be there across everything. B is you can...
B's about benefit plans.
Select and price of benefit plans to be offered through the exchange.
I think that's where you say...
Including the essential benefit package.
Including the essential benefit package. That's the basic. Yeah.
Do we want an even stronger statement that says each plan offered through the exchange shall meet the basic... The shall contain the basic benefits package at a minimum? And if I want to, I'm not suggesting this accurately reflects the recommendations of the health fund board. I think it does, but
sure. Let's put that in there.
Yeah.
Can I throw out another one, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
This would be under the category of throwing a bone out, but how to? I'd like to see there how to max. The other way around.
Okay.
How to maximize participation of the largest number of non-state insurance providers or non-public insurance providers?
Absolutely. Let's look at four.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, I was going to suggest you look at 4A.
Let's look at 4A.
Excuse me, 4A.
And then come back.
How to select
insurance
carriers.
That's what I thought, but that's how to select and how to enhance participation, or I think they're not exclusive. I just think they need to be.
Maybe it's select and encourage.
Let's go down. Look at four. Let's come because we're really running out of time. And
again,
then
three is shall, four is may. They may look at how to select. They may look at an individual requirement. They may look at whether it will be the exclusive market for the small and individual. They may look at health savings account, high deductible plans, 125s, and the need for a reinsurance program.
You want to craft a statement in either three or four, because I think it's a great principle that maximizes private
participation.
I'm sorry.
That's exactly right. That maximizes participation of private or non-public insurance providers.
I think that's great. I think that's what we want to do. I mean, the more we can get into that exchange, the better it is. We might end up mandating the exchange. That's one of the things they could consider, but I don't think we're starting on an a priori basis saying this is where the whole insurance market is going to be.
For my
friend Cannon?
I'm wondering where, this is a question, where we insert the principle that was in new section A related to the basic benefits package, the principle that there should be a product available at little or no cost for those living below federal poverty level with contributions increasing as financial means rise. I don't know if that goes in the exchange section or somewhere else, but that principle, which is not a benefit, but is a
No, I think
statement of.
I think it's a good place.
Yeah, okay.
Let's put it up in three. Mm-hmm. I think it could be shortened just a little bit in terms of words. But
yeah.
4B, is that redundant?
4B is where we're going to put the essential benefit package. This has to do with subsidies.
3B.
I'm saying a requirement for an individual. Why don't you just say consider an individual mandate?
That is what we're saying.
Yeah.
We're considering whether you require an individual mandate.
No, I'm saying, is that sentence redundant by saying, because an individual mandate is a requirement.
Right.
The use of an individual mandate?
It's a semantics.
Yeah, the use of an individual mandate.
Adoption of.
But we'll put, we were talking about that other language will go as a separate item under 3?
Yes.
Okay. I think we're okay except for whether the exchange is created. Let's debate that when we get the amendments back. And it's not in my mind, it's a huge symbolic thing, but not a huge material thing.
And again, that this entire section creates a lot of angst for a lot of people.
What is the angst that's created in it?
The angst is the individual mandate.
Well, but this doesn't require an individual mandate. You mean the angst?
The creation? No. The
angst for the 2009 session, not for the 2011 session. That's what I'm worried about. If there's angst for anything we specifically do, let's deal with that. If there's angst and things that might happen in the next legislative session.
It gets back to the question then whether or not we're establishing the exchange or we're establishing or we're telling the authority to develop a plan for an exchange.
Okay. I think I have a way where we can do both, where we establish the exchange and put in the language that it can't operate until the plan for these elements is approved by the legislature. That's basically what I'm saying I would like to do. I'd like to establish the exchange and then have, over the next 2 years, the board of the authority create a plan for it that comes to the legislature for approval as to how the exchange can operate. Conceivably, it could work fast enough so that we would get it, it's hard to believe, but we could get it in session we had during 2010. But the fact is, we're talking about creating this agency over the next 2 years. I mean, we won't even have the agency fully created before we come back into session. So I could be backed off this one, but let's go with this one, and we'll go with it this way, and we'll figure it out when we get it back as an amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I may, there were a couple more issues that have come to my attention. If I have,
you can have
3 minutes.
2.5 minutes for both of them combined.
It's become clear that one of the problems we have is figuring out exactly what's going on out there in the hospital market. And so a proposal has come before us that we should require hospitals to report their rates to DHS on an annual basis.
To where?
Sorry, to the authority. And it's nothing more than a report. There is a requirement. There's a civil penalty. And the goal, again, is to simply get a handle around what's going on around hospital rates.
Where would you put that?
I think that would be a brand-new section in the bill added as a as something that has to be done by the authority. You could put it in Section 11.
Let's get it as an individual.
Individual.
If I change my mind, let's bring it back as a separate amendment.
Separate amendment, okay.
Change from what I said earlier today.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, there's also the feeling that the health services industry is building an infrastructure out there. Some places we need it and some places we don't need it. And the thought was to have the authority look at that, establish evidence-based benchmarks for determining the level of health services required and bring that forward for some way of cutting down on the redundancies that are going out for various healthcare infrastructure plans that are being built.
think that's too big to talk about also at 2 minutes to five.
Okay.
What we can do is we can work with both of those issues. Madam Minister, do we have 2009 back on for Monday? And
we are not here on Monday, Mr.
And
Chair.
That's right. You're in for Wednesday?
Wednesday.
We have a bunch of other business. What I was going to propose
is... coming up? It is coming up. Yes, we do have it on Wednesday because Wednesday is the 3 to 5, which we have non-2009 bills, and then 6 to 8 is 2009.
In front of the Senate.
We can draft some other amendments ready for that one. Let's get these drafted without these two. And what I would hope to do in the afternoon session, are we doing regular work?
We have, yes, Mr. Chair, we have three public hearings, Representative Thompson bills, and then we also have 2009 up in the afternoon session, should time allow. And then we carry it over until the evening.
All right. If time allows, we could handle. So what we can do is get the LC working on this big set of amendments. We could slip these in if we decide to handle them on Monday. On Wednesday, we'll try and leave time to do it, but I think the LC works on Monday.
I'm going to email them in the morning.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, those are very similar to two bills we've introduced, so it shouldn't be too difficult for them to draft something.
We can do them either way, yeah.
For the record, Mr. Chair, folks have in the packet written testimony from Western Alliance, an email from Mike Huntington, testimony from the AFL-CIO, and the Oregon Center for Christian Values. Members, you have it in your packet. Please put it in your folder.
If others of you hadn't had email, I can assure you I have had a flood of email discussing the extent to which a claims processing fee on as a part of the provider's tax is viewed as either desirable or undesirable. The weight in pounds of the electrons used in the undesirable side exceeds by far the electrons used, suggesting that this is a great idea. But my answer to them is the same as I would give here. We are considering all options at the moment. We'll see where we go with that.
And one last suggestion. You know, the use of the word authority is so just, it's such a downer. I don't really like it. So I'm going to make a suggestion.
It's a downer for Republicans.
Oh, here you go.
For everybody. Yeah. I think we should rename it the Ministry of Universal Happiness.
How about the Universal Happiness Authority?
Ministry of Universal
Happiness. Now that we have a federal government socializing the banking industry, we could do anything.
Why would you
here,
stop
I think.
There?
Yeah. I'll close the work session on HB 2009. And before we leave, I want to comment on the work that Mr. Burns has been doing since about September. Is really quite extraordinary. And,
all right.
We are.